Imagine you open this really sleek, modern messaging app on your brand new smartphone.
Oh, yeah.
The interface is beautiful, the chat bubbles look pristine, but there's a catch. The camera doesn't work, the microphone is totally dead.
Which is pretty useless for a modern app.
Right, you can't send a picture of your dog, you can't record a quick voice note, you can't even drop a laughing emoji. All you have is just a plain text keyboard.
It's the absolute definition of a functional but completely hollow user experience.
Exactly. And today we're doing a deep dive into how an app called Mio was trapped in exactly that state and the really astonishing 28 minutes it took to break out of it.
Yeah, the web version of Mio, it looked the part, but it was completely missing the engine to handle, anything other than text.
Right.
The Telegram integrated version of Mio had multimedia capabilities for a while, but the web chat was just lagging way, way behind.
Well, welcome to the deep dive, everyone. We are thrilled to have you here with us. Today, our mission is to unpack this massive software update.
Version 0.0.5 specifically.
Yes, exactly. We're looking through the development notes for Mio version 0.0.5. We really want to figure out what it takes to transform a text-only web interface into this fully-fledged multimedia messaging app that can, stand toe-to-toe with giants like Telegram.
It's a huge leap.
It really is. And I should warn you, the timeline for how long this massive update actually took to build, it's going to completely short-circuit your
Oh,
brain.
for sure. It redefines standard software development entirely.
But I'm keeping those final numbers and the wild secret of how they pulled it off locked in a vault until the end of our conversation. You're definitely going to stick around for that.
It's worth the wait.
Yeah.
But, to understand the leap, we have to start with the foundational hurdle of this update.
The phone with no camera.
Right. The developer notes describe the old web UI perfectly as a phone with no camera. And to fix this, they had to introduce something called a two-phase upload architecture.
Okay, let me pause you there because as a user, this feels, I don't know, a bit counterintuitive.
How so?
Well, when I attach a photo to a text message and hit send, it feels like a single unified action, right? I click the button and the whole package just goes to my friend.
Yeah, that's the illusion.
So why overcomplicate the engineering? Like, why not just bundle the photo data with the text data in the code and just fire it all off to the server at once?
I mean, from a user interface perspective, you're right. It absolutely should feel like one action. But under the hood, if you bundle a massive media file with a tiny string of text, you're creating a very fragile system.
Really? Why is it fragile?
Because uploading and sending are fundamentally different operations. And more importantly, they fail for completely different reasons.
Okay, well, let's break down those failure modes. How does a photo fail differently than a text?
Think about the actual physics of the data moving across the internet. An upload involves moving a potentially massive file like a high-resolution photo or a really heavy video.
Right, which takes time.
Exactly. And that operation might fail because, say, the file size exceeds a limit, or the format is unrecognizable, or maybe the server's memory is just overwhelmed and drops the connection.
Ah, I see.
But a message send, on the other hand, is just a few bytes of data. If a send fails, it's almost always an authentication issue. Or maybe the system rate limited you for sending too many messages too fast.
Oh, I get the problem now. If you tie a 10 megabyte file upload to a tiny text message send and your Wi-Fi blips, causing the upload to fail, the whole bundled package just crashes.
Yep, the app throws an error.
And the user's drafted text's probably wiped out and they have absolutely no idea why.
Decoupling them into two phases, upload first, send later, it solves that entirely. So here is how version 0.5.5 handles it. When you pick a photo, the client immediately starts uploading the file in the background.
Oh, before you even hit send.
Exactly. It goes to a specific media endpoint on the server. The server validates it, stores it in memory, and then it hands back a simple ID tag, which they call a media ID. Then, when you finally tap the send button, the message payload just includes that tiny media ID alongside your text.
Wow, that is incredibly smooth. So that means the app can show you a progress bar for the photo, handle an upload error gracefully without deleting your drafted text, and, let you preview the image before you commit to sending it.
Yeah, and the architectural elegance on the back end is even better. By stripping the file out of the message payload and just giving it that media ID, the server can route that file through its existing process media pipeline.
The same one Telegram uses.
Exactly. It's the exact same code that handles photos and voice messages coming in from the Telegram side of Mio.
Oh, that's clever.
They just built an in-memory web downloader that wraps the web upload in the same interface. So it's one processing pipeline, two completely different input sources, and zero duplicated logic.
Getting a static photo to upload cleanly is a great start, obviously, but reading through the development notes, it seems like capturing live audio is an entirely different beast.
Oh, it's a nightmare.
Yeah, apparently building a voice memo feature that actually works across different web browsers introduces like a whole new level of chaos.
It is a notorious headache for web developers. The issue lies with the browser's Media Recorder API. There is no universally agreed upon standard for how a browser should compress and decompress digital audio.
Which is what we call an audio codec, right?
Right. So Google Chrome, for example, natively supports a format called WebM with the Opus codec.
Which is basically the gold standard for this kind of thing, isn't it? Because it compresses the audio into a tiny file while keeping really clear voice quality.
Very much so. But Apple Safari historically refused to support WebM entirely. It only offered MP4 formatting. And Firefox has its own distinct preferences too.
So it's a total mess.
Totally. So if your app just fires a command to the browser saying, hey, start recording, you have no idea what codec format you're actually going to get back. The server might not even be able to read it.
Wait, so it's kind of like walking into a massive international restaurant, and before you can even sit down and look at the menu to order your food, you have to actively negotiate with the waiter about which language you're going to speak.
That is the perfect way to visualize it.
Just so the kitchen will understand the ticket.
Yeah, and the fix in version 0.5 is literally a coded negotiation right at the start of the recording process. The app actively checks with the browser, like, hey, do you support audio/web with the Opus codec?
And if it says yes.
If the browser says yes, great, they speak that language. If it says no, the app gracefully falls back to audio/MP4. The backend server is explicitly configured to accept both formats, so the user never sees that chaotic translation happening behind the scenes.
I love that. It's those invisible negotiations that make software actually feel seamless. But even with that negotiation working perfectly, there was a bug in this version that sounded absolutely infuriating.
The silent voice bug.
Yes. Users would record a voice message, hit send, and nothing would happen. No error message, no bounce back. The message just vanished into the void.
A loud bug that crashes the app is easy to find because, well, it leaves wreckage. A silent bug is a developer's worst nightmare. And this wasn't just a simple typo. It was three separate layers of logical failure stacked on top of each other.
Okay, let's pull apart this three-layer cake of disaster. What was the first layer? Let me guess. Since we just talked about the two-phase upload, the app looked at the voice message, saw there was no text attached to it, and assumed it was an accidental click.
You nailed it. The first layer was on the client side, right in the browser. The function responsible for sending messages had an early return condition. It basically checked to see if the message had any text in it.
Right, but a voice message wouldn't have text.
Exactly. A voice-only message doesn't have text. It just has that media ID. But the client's own internal security guard saw an empty text string, assumed it was garbage data, and threw the voice message in the trash before it even left the browser.
So the app was basically saying, no text, not a real message, next.
Yeah.
Okay, but the developer notes indicate that even if it had somehow made it past that first guard, the server would have killed it anyway? Why?
That brings us to layer two, which is server schema validation. The server had a strict mathematical rule for incoming messages. It required a minimum of one character in the text field using a .min1 requirement.
Oh, so another roadblock.
Right. A voice message with an empty text string would have hit that wall and failed validation instantly. They had to swap out that rigid .min1 rule for a more flexible .refine function.
And what's that do?
This new rule essentially says, hey, it's okay if the text is empty as long as the array of media IDs is not empty. It basically teaches the server that a picture or a voice note is the message.
That makes total sense. That's a logical fix. But there was a third layer, right? The notes describe it as a race condition wrapped in a prayer.
Yes. So a race condition happens when software operations occur in an unpredictable order. In the original code, when a user finished a voice recording, the app used a function called setTimeout to wait for exactly 500 milliseconds.
Just waiting.
It was literally crossing its fingers, hoping that half a second was enough time for the app's internal state to update with the newly generated media ID before it tried to read it and send the message.
Waiting half a second and just hoping for the best is not exactly robust engineering. I mean, if the network is slow or the browser is sluggish, that half second isn't going to be enough.
Precisely the problem. Sometimes the state updated in 200 milliseconds and the message sent perfectly fine. Sometimes it took 600 milliseconds and the code grabbed an empty ID, failing silently.
Wow. So how did they fix that?
The fix was a structural change. Instead of waiting and hoping, the function that saves the recording now returns the actual data object directly to the send function. The app uses it instantly.
Yeah.
No state dependency, no timing games.
So layer by layer, they unclogged the pipes so voice messages could actually flow. But fixing a broken feature is one thing. What happens when an app completely ignores a user the second they sign up?
The heartbeat issue.
Yes. That brings us to an issue with the heartbeat system. Mio uses a proactive messaging system, right? The heartbeat regularly queries the database to find user sessions that haven't had any activity in a while, and it sends them a context-aware check-in message.
Yeah, it's meant to be welcoming, to re-engage people who might have drifted away.
But there was a massive flaw in the database logic in SQL NLL. How did a four-letter database term manage to completely ghost brand new users?
It all comes down to how databases handle the concept of nothing. The heartbeat system filtered users by looking at a timestamp called last message at. The logic said, find me all users where their last message at timestamp is less than our inactivity threshold.
Okay, simple enough.
The problem is, brand new users who had just finished onboarding but hadn't sent a single message yet didn't have a timestamp at all. Their last message at value was NLL.
But in plain English, NLL just means empty, right? So shouldn't the database just register it as zero and realize they haven't sent anything?
That is the human assumption, sure. But in an INSWL database, NEL does not mean zero. NELL means unknown.
Oh, wait. Unknown.
Yes. So when the heartbeat system asked the database, is NL less than the threshold? The database didn't evaluate it as yes or no. It evaluated it to an unknown state, which SQL treats as false in this context.
No.
Therefore, every single brand new user was entirely excluded from the query. They never received a welcome message.
It's like a bouncer at a nightclub who is given strict orders to let in anyone under the age of 30. But when a person walks up and hands the bouncer a completely blank ID card, the bouncer doesn't say you can't come in. The bouncer's brain just freezes. They stare straight ahead and completely ignore the person's existence.
That's exactly it. The system simply could not process the absence of data. The fix was remarkably simple, though. Just adding one line of code to append or last message at ISNLL to the database query.
And that fixed it.
Yep. Suddenly, the system knows how to handle the blank ID, and new users get their welcoming heartbeat message.
It is amazing how one logical oversight like that can ruin the entire onboarding experience. But creating a welcoming environment isn't just about automated messages. It's about giving users the tools to express themselves. And, I mean, you can't have a modern messaging app without emojis.
No, you really can't.
Version 0.5 didn't just add an emoji picker. It implemented a lazy-loaded architecture with full Chinese locale support.
Emojis seem simple. But rendering hundreds of high-resolution graphic files on a web page is a massive memory drain. If you load every single emoji the moment the user opens the web chat, you'll bog down the browser, especially on older devices.
So how do you provide a rich emoji library without turning the app into a sluggish mess?
By lazy loading. The app loads the structural shell of the emoji picker, but it doesn't actually download all those individual image files until the user explicitly clicks the smiley face icon to open the menu.
Oh, that saves a tremendous amount of upfront memory.
It really does.
Yeah.
And coupling that performance upgrade with the integration of Chinese locale files means the interface automatically translates its labels and search functions, drastically expanding the app's global accessibility.
We're seeing this app really grow up in this version. And speaking of maturity, version 0.3.5 also made a massive leap on the administrative side. They stopped using environment variables to manage user access and migrated to a real database table.
That was a huge step.
For those who aren't back-end engineers, what does that transition actually mean?
Well, environment variable is essentially a hard-coded sticky node on the server's back-end. Before this update, if the developer wanted to grant a new user access to Mio, they had to manually edit that sticky note in the server's configuration and completely restart the application. It is a very raw, manual process.
Which is fine if you have three friends testing your app, but impossible if you have thousands of users.
It would never survive real operations. So in 0.0.5, they executed migration 00003, creating a dedicated database table called telegram_allowist. They built a full web admin page with a Chinese UI to manage users visually. Now, customer support or community managers can add or remove access with the click of a button without ever touching the code or restarting the server. It really marks the transition from a developer's toy to a scalable product.
Maturity comes with a dangerous trade-off. With a real database, real user management, and now the ability to upload heavy media files, this system suddenly has a massive attack surface. Letting anonymous people upload files to your server is terrifying. It's time to lock the doors.
Oh, absolutely. And the development team knew this. The update notes detail a rigorous security gauntlet. They didn't just casually review the code, they ran aggressive audit iterations, scanning every single file and endpoint.
And they found 17 vulnerabilities, right?
Yes. They found and fixed 17 distinct vulnerabilities before launching.
17 is a huge number for one update. Let's look at a few of the critical ones. The first fix is Magic Byte MIME validation. MIME is basically just the internet's standard way of labeling what type of file is being sent. But the notes say you cannot trust those labels, or even the file extensions. Why not?
Because a file extension, like .jpg or a MIE label, is essentially just a name tag. And anyone can write whatever they want on a name tag. A malicious user could take a destructive executable virus and simply rename the file to photo.jpg.
Wow, okay.
If the server only checks the name tag, it says, oh, a photo, come on in. And suddenly you have malware executing on your back end.
That is terrifyingly simple. So what are magic bytes and how do they stop this from happening?
Magic bytes are the physical file signatures, like a digital DNA embedded within the data of the file itself, right at the very beginning, usually represented in hexadecimal bytes. A true JPEG file always starts with a specific sequence of this DNA.
And a virus wouldn't.
Right. An executable malware file starts with a completely different sequence.
Yeah.
The fix was to use a library that ignores the name tag and reads the actual file bytes.
Yeah.
If the DNA says executable but the name tag says JPEG, the server rejects it instantly.
Wow. Next on the security list was a global memory cap. This ties directly back to the dangers of the two-phase upload we discussed earlier.
Remember, in a two-phase upload, files are uploaded and held in the server's active memory until the user finally hits send. Without a limit, a malicious actor or even just a confused user with a bad connection could start uploading hundreds of massive video files and just leave them hanging in a pending state.
That would fill up the server's RAM and cause an out-of-memory crash. It would take down the entire chat app for every single user.
Exactly. So to prevent an OHM crash, they instituted a strict 500 megabyte global cap across all pending uploads from the entire server, plus a per-user limit allowing only 3 concurrent pending files. It mathematically ensures no single user can monopolize the system's resources.
Smart. And then there's path traversal. The notes mention blocking file names like .../etc/pathway.jpg. Let's explain the mechanics of that because it sounds like something out of a hacker movie.
It kind of is. In computer file systems, those .../characters are a command to move up one folder directory. A hacker uses that file name to force the server to back out of the designated safe media folder and climb up into the server's brain.
Oh, I see. What are they looking for up there?
They are trying to reach critical system files, like /etc/password, which stores user account data, to overwrite or steal them. Version 0.0.5 actively sanitizes all incoming file names to strip out any of that directory jumping code.
They also added ownership checks, so you can't just guess someone else's media ID and steal their private photos. And they filtered URL schemes so people couldn't inject malicious links disguised as inline images.
They've really covered their bases.
When you look at these 17 fixes, you realize that the difference between an app that works and an app that is actually safe to deploy is a canyon filled with edge cases and malicious actors.
Yeah, but once those 17 holes were plugged, the foundation wasn't just functional, it was rock solid.
Okay. We've covered a massive architectural shift to two-phase uploads. We navigated the nightmare of browser voice codecs. We squashed the silent voice bug by unraveling a three-layer logic trap. We fixed the database heartbeat ghosting new users.
Yep.
We built a lazy-loaded emoji system, deployed a database-backed admin panel, and survived a 17-point security gauntlet.
It's a lot.
Now it is time for the big reveal. I teased the timeline at the very beginning of the deep dive. How long did it take to build all of this? Let's look at the final statistics. 38 files changed, 3,009 lines of code added, 12 out of 12 tests passing perfectly.
That number's wild.
Implementation time, 18 minutes and 30 seconds.
Incredible.
The brutal security audit, 8 minutes and 42 seconds. The final release process, 1 minute and 14 seconds. Total time from the start of the version update to the final secure deployed release, approximately 28 minutes.
And here's the secret. The reason why that timeline defies the laws of human capability, it wasn't a human typing those 3,009 lines.
Wait, what?
This entire update was architected, written, debugged, and audited by AI agents. The developers used two parallel AI agents handling the implementation simultaneously, and then deployed two separate parallel AI agents to act as hostile security auditors.
It is absolutely staggering. In the time it takes to watch a single episode of a sitcom, a team of AI agents took a text-only web interface and brought it to total, feature-complete, multimedia parity with Telegram. It's not a second-class citizen anymore. It handles text, images, voice, lazy-loaded emojis, global locales, all of it.
What is truly significant here isn't just the speed, though the speed is breathtaking. It is the quality of the architecture. The AI didn't just hack together a messy solution. It understood the nuanced difference between upload failure modes and send failure modes. It correctly implemented Magic Byte MIME validation and structurally mitigated race conditions. It built a robust, professional-grade foundation.
It really makes you step back and reconsider everything about how we build technology. We started this conversation talking about that expectation of sensory completeness, how an app without photos or voice feels empty, like a phone without a camera.
Right.
For decades, adding those complex features, plugging those microscopic security holes, negotiating with endless browser APIs that represented months of grueling engineering work, it was a massive barrier to entry that killed thousands of new ideas before they could even launch.
It was a huge bottleneck.
But if AI agents can lay a completely secure, bug-free foundation for complex multimodal interaction in just 28 minutes, well, what does the future of software look like when that barrier to building the foundation is effectively zero?
It changes everything.
It really does. When we no longer have to spend months just trying to make a voice note work safely, what wild, unimaginable new ideas will we finally have the energy to build on top of it? It's something to think about the next time you tap that little microphone icon to send a message. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. We'll see you next time.